So I always want to say that.
Ron.
For sure.
Mike, please.
Mike.
Okay. Let's get it started. So let's call a roll.
Case. Jadish. Evans.
Here.
Kasserug.
Here.
Leidig.
Here.
Mead.
Here.
Slivka. Stevenson.
Here.
Stocking.
Here.
Got a quorum.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Okay, a motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Approval of the minutes of the last meeting of July 12, 2018.
Move to approve. Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. So we'll move on to the public hearing section of the meeting tonight. The first item is item A, text amendment to Title 11 of the Geneva City Code, request for text amendment to Section 11-2-2, definitions of words and terms, and Section 11-3-12, wireless services of Title 11 of the Geneva City Code zoning ordinance related to the regulation of wireless communication facilities in the city of Geneva, Illinois. This is continued from our last hearing of July 12, 2018. I believe, David, we have some additional items on record.
In addition to the items that were read into the record at the last meeting, we received some additional articles from resident John Hunter at the Plan Commission meeting on July 12, 2018. The first was an article titled 5G Wireless Pits Cities Against Telecoms and Their Friends in the FCC by Alan Holmes. An article titled 5G Radiation Dangers, 11 Reasons to Be Concerned by Lloyd Burrow. Article titled 5G Technology Dangerous. Early data shows a slight increase of tumors in male rats exposed to cell phone radiation by Jim Pazangara. A case from Santa Fe Alliance for Public Health and Safety. Arthur Furstenberg and Monica Steinoff versus the City of Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then an article, 5G and the IoT, a scientific overview of human health risks by the Environmental Health Trust. Additionally, since the July 12th meeting, the following items have been added to the record. An article titled, Cell Phone Towers Do Not Affect Property Values, or the case of three board hearings and one temporary tower by Richard A. Forsten, Wendy Stabler, and Olafunk Bagbami. Questions and answers regarding amendments to Title 11, questions received from the commissioners and council members, and staff's responses to those questions. A zoning map depicting a 500-foot buffer from residential districts. Questions and answers from aldermen and from commissioners regarding amendments that were proposed to Title 8. Small Wireless Facility Deployment Act, what can we still regulate by Ansel Glink. Frequently asked questions on small wireless facilities prepared by the Illinois Municipal League. Copy of a PowerPoint presentation that was prepared for the City Council meeting on July 16th by Cityscape. Summary of the case of Industrial Tower and Wireless LLC versus Esposito. Summary of the case of Charles S. Hayes Incorporated versus the Commission of the County of Sir Joseph. That is
all. That's quite a bit from just 2 weeks.
It was.
I'm going to emphasize at this point, just to be clear in this hearing, is that Title 8 was decided by City Council in the last meeting. So anything dealing with the right-of-way and units on the light poles, anything dealing with that was dealt with by City Council. And that decision has been made. We are dealing with the issues associated with it, siting on private properties. So I just want to make sure that everybody is very clear on that.
Okay, sure. All right. Okay, I guess just to start with kind of a quick recap of our last meeting, there was some confusion over what was contained within Title 8 and what was contained within Title 11. Title 8 primarily dealt with the small wireless facilities and their location in the right-of-way and the city's ability to regulate their spacing, their aesthetic appearance, but not to prohibit them in the right-of-way. The Act established kind of minimum standards and gave the municipalities an ability to establish some local controls by August 1st. As Chairman Stocking noted, the council did elect to do that on July 16th, and those controls are now in place. Those controls give us some ability to require co-location, require them to use existing utility poles instead of installing a new pole within close proximity to those poles, to require co-location, to conceal the equipment boxes that are located either on the poles or near the poles. So those are in place. The amendments that are proposed to Title 11 that relate to small wireless facilities are because they are also allowed in commercial and industrial properties, on private property, not in the right-of-way. But those same controls that were established in Title 8 are proposed by cross-reference in the amendments that you have before you tonight in Title 11 for private property. So we would have that same ability to say if there's an existing pole, you use that. You have to conceal it. We have some additional review if it's in a historic district, some additional requirements we can apply. Between the last meeting and this meeting, I did send you a video of the meeting from the City Council meeting on July 16th. Also the PowerPoint, and that I think that PowerPoint really illustrates the need for that local control and what would be allowed without it. So I guess before I go further, I'd just like to make sure there's no questions or if that's kind of been clarified since the last meeting.
Well, I like the fact that we're trying to be consistent on both titles, so that's right. Good. You know, any way we can be as consistent as possible, you know, in the application of the standards, regardless of their location, is good. So I think that's just my first general observation.
Okay.
Any other comments? Yes.
I know that the plan was possibly to try to meet with the advisors from Cityscape and I guess just make sure that any text or verbiage we were going to use would essentially make us as exclusionary as possible without being branded exclusionary. I guess were there any type of changes or discussions had around that?
With regards to Title 8 and Title 11, we had some discussion regarding how far can we push, and really what's presented is kind of walking right up to that line is the way it was described. These are the regulations that have been tested as defensible. Some of the specific amendments to Title 11 I'm prepared to speak to regarding the actual cell phone towers, because some of what we have on our books now are not really defensible, and there's been some proposed changes to those.
And again, just to kind of clarify, I guess for everyone, essentially really how it works is if we do nothing, we would be, I guess, you know, ruled by the de facto laws that are, you know, I guess locked in for the state of Illinois, right? If we push too far, same thing. If they're not defensible, they could be cut down, and we're governed by the de facto bylaws that are in there. So the idea is to find that, I guess, that happy medium, again, in protecting us as much as possible.
Correct.
Yes, ma'am.
Communities across the state are in this exact same position, and many of them are going to pass their own laws regarding the same thing, I imagine. Is there some kind of state review that actually goes and looks at what communities have done to see whether or not they are pushing it too far, or is it going to just wait until there was a lawsuit to test it? How does that work?
That I don't know. I might have to defer to Elizabeth, our consultant with Cityscape.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Harrington Smith, and I am the Government Relations Manager with Cityscape Consultants, and we work with communities across the country, and this is not the only state that has revised laws, and it has been done on a federal level as well since you first enacted your ordinance. So there's been many things, which is kind of what's bringing the code to compliance. So there is not a state governing, if you will. What happens is if What we do is we look at it from a perspective of making sure that your community is compliant with the laws, both federally and on a state basis, and has as much protection as you can have and as much control as you can. The wireless industry has been very their lobbying efforts have been quite extensive across the country in every state. And so they push until they get what they can. And then what we've been doing is we work exclusively with local government and helping, making sure that your community is protected without putting you at risk. So what happens is once an application comes to you, once it goes through the process, through your code, if there's anything in there there's a pushback on, you fall to whether it's state or federal regulation. And that's what we've done. We've made sure that you are in compliance with both of those for both Title 8 and Title 11. So,
thank you.
Yes, Brad.
I'm not sure that it's really all that relevant, but in the city council hearing and all the material, I didn't see a specific answer of what happens if we don't enact the law. Can we go and do it later, and then the state law is no longer in effect, or do we have to do it, or it's state law and you can't go back after that?
I believe that question was answered, and the answer was we could adopt regulations after the August 1st deadline, but there would be a window there where the state law would be the de facto regulations, and other communities that have gone through this have seen applications filed very shortly after the deadline had passed. We have already received a request for a pre-application meeting for small wireless facilities in our right-of-way. So the companies are definitely following very closely and looking for their opportunities.
Issues is due to the Telecommunications Act, if you don't have regulations in place and it falls to the state and you allow one to come in at a certain way and your regulations aren't in place, you have to allow everybody. So once you open Pandora's box, if you will, it's all no hold barred, really. So
makes sense.
Yeah.
John?
To Brad's point, if we prove this tonight, making us as restrictive as we can within the restrictions placed on us governing this by the state and the Fed, and we later want to amend it, we're able to do that, right? So in my mind, it's in our best interest to get as restrictive as we can within the guidelines that they've said. But if we find something that needs to be modified later, we can always go back and modify it. But
right.
We're also subject to what is in place at the time of an application, probably, or is it the time of an approval?
Well, we are always able to go. Yeah,
yeah,
we're always able to go back and amend
right.
our ordinances,
right.
You know, provided that those amendments are also within
right.
the enabling legislation and consistent with case law. So we're always able to make those fine-tune adjustments as needed. If an application's already on file or a permit's already been issued, that would be grandfathered in under the previous regulations.
Yeah, so there'll be an opportunity as things progress,
sure.
as we see things around the state,
just like
country,
any other
to
order.
See what's going on and how the impacts are being felt. Cindy?
All right, let's say we go through and we take care of all this. What's next? When's 6G coming? What are we going to do about that?
That will be our next amendment, probably. When's
6G coming?
6G.
Oh, sorry.
The next generation. Yeah. I mean, technology is moving very rapidly in many different areas. They might even have a different transmission process, and who knows?
Great.
Well, if this, excuse me.
Yep.
Following Cindy's question, if this equipment becomes obsolete, do they have to remove it?
There is an abandonment clause within the regulations that would require them to remove it within 90 days.
Yeah. You have to deal with the city.
But what if they go out of business? Then what?
They're still responsible for removing their equipment.
Okay. but what if they're no longer there?
Go right ahead, please. You're the expert.
Okay, sorry. So the way the technology, and you're right, the technology is still evolving, even for 5G. And we're seeing newer and newer technologies coming up almost every day, and it hasn't quite settled down yet. It settled down for a while with the big macro towers. Those are not going to go away. These small wireless facilities, they feed into those. So you're never going to, they're not going to go away. So you're not going to find, like, big towers totally abandoned because they don't need that anymore. Some of the heights are coming down a little bit in some instances, but we're still seeing, I mean, as far as not asking for 300-foot towers anymore, it's more over ambient tree height is the height. But they're not going away. They have to feed into it. It all works together.
Are you looking for questions now on the code itself? If we've read it,
Title 11.
Yeah,
I can kind of go over, I guess, the highlighted key changes.
That would be good.
And I have some exhibits. I'll probably go to the podium and pull those up. So some of the discussion we had at the last meeting was regarding the proposed removal of the 500-foot buffer from residential districts for new cell phone towers. Right now, we kind of have contradictory language within our zoning regulations. In one section, it says that a tower could be allowed in any district by special use, and if located in a residential district, the setback requirement is the height of the tower plus 10 feet. So all of these kind of orangish and yellow areas are residential districts. A tower could locate by special use permit in any one of those areas, and if it's a 100-foot tower with a 110-foot setback. So that could be, you know, Wheeler Park or Cemetery or Good Templar Park or, you know, any of these residentially zoned areas would be eligible. But then in the next section of the ordinance, we have language that says if it's in a commercial or business zone, it has to be at least 500 feet away from a residential district, which they're also allowed in. So when you apply that 500-foot buffer, you really wipe out the entire community as even eligible for consideration as a special use permit.
Yeah.
This is not a defensible regulation that we would be able to uphold. This is exclusionary in its nature. In addition to that, we also had no height parameters for towers, even by special use permit. So the maximum height of a tower would be controlled by the underlying zoning. As a small suburban community, we don't have very, very great building heights in our zoning districts. We have a maximum of 80 feet in the I-2 district, and we only have one building that is zoned I-2. So that also could be viewed as exclusionary. So those are really the main changes that are being proposed regarding cell phone towers and the amendments before you this evening, is to remove that 500-foot buffer requirement from residential districts. Your buffer requirements need to be based on substantial evidence that it's for public safety or public welfare. And that's why we typically stick to the maximum tower height, because if it should fail, it would be contained on the property on which it's located. You can add a little bit of a buffer setback on top of that. So what we have proposed is the height of the tower plus the setback of the district in which it's located in. And then for building heights, it's kind of twofold. It's a maximum height of 80 feet if it's not concealed, meaning the antennas are just on the outside of the pole, or a maximum height of 100 feet if it is concealed, providing a little bit of incentive to make them more attractive. So I guess with that, I would pause for questions or...
Just, and I apologize if some of this I should have gotten, but there's a lot here, and trying to remember when you're reading one thing, if it applies to a different property type, it had me thinking thoroughly. Just to start, though, there is no ability to place a tower or a small cell on residential property. Is that correct?
By a special use permit.
So if I wanted one on my own individual lot, I could come forward, and it could be allowed, but because I read mostly about commercial,
right,
in here, right? So on resi property, it would be by special use, and that's obviously got different conditions. You couldn't put a tall tower on someone's small lot because you don't have the setback,
right?
So, but a large residential lot could apply for one, right? As written,
by a special use permit. I think the other part to point out is that in order for a new tower to be located, they would first have to demonstrate that they cannot locate,
right,
on our existing towers, the one by the public workstation, our existing water towers. They further have to demonstrate that they cannot locate in any other of our preferred locations.
Right.
It's section 11.3-12E2.
Right.
There's a full page listing of siting preferences, and you have to demonstrate why each,
right,
one ahead of your preferred option is not applicable or not possible,
right,
to be considered for a new tower. And new towers really don't come to letter F.
Okay.
So they basically have to provide some technical basis on why the cell tower needs to be at this location for coverage purposes.
They have to demonstrate the coverage purposes. They have to demonstrate why they can't locate at these other locations.
Right.
And then they also have to demonstrate compliance with the 9 special use standards.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
The buffer for height, we have the 100 and the 80, essentially, and we have a full tower without a breakaway, and you have a tower with a breakpoint technology. I like the idea, personally, of exploring some form of formal buffer, and I don't know if that's a hundred. I think you said it was going to be the height of the tower or the height of the breakaway plus the normal setback on that lot. So it would be if the setback on the nearest side or something, or from all sides, I guess.
Right.
Okay. Is it worth considering that it's 100 feet plus a certain percentage, or not, or a setback not to be less than 25 feet or 50 feet or something? And I don't want to be exclusionary, but I just think if these fall or they're damaged in a storm, I don't necessarily think they should fall on the property line. They should fall within the property that has bargained for its existence, right? So,
right, and that's the proposal is the height of the tower or the breakpoint plus the required setback.
What would the minimum setback be?
It depends on the district it's located in.
Yeah,
a standard business district, you're looking at 20 feet.
20 feet.
Residential districts vary from as little as 6 feet to 20 feet as well.
And the resi would be like a park versus...
Right,
versus.
And those are our most restrictive zoning districts,
right,
are the RR and RE, which is where you'll see your cemeteries and parks,
right,
and they have setback requirements of 20 feet for the side yards, 35 feet for rear
yards. I guess
just
where I'm going is, what would the minimum buffer be, just so that you can understand... It's going to be the height of the tower plus at least 6 feet, at least 12 feet, at least 20 feet. So
it's the smallest setback we have is 6.
6.
In a case. Yeah.
That feels small, and I don't know if it's worth exploring, said not to be less than 20 feet, not to be less than 10, or if that adds further complications for another reason. I found myself thinking about the buffer a lot.
There's an excess for a public safety reason.
I mean, that's again in our...
There might be that type.
That's in a high-density residential district where you're not likely to have a lot large enough to accommodate a tower.
True.
To have a setback of 6 feet.
True.
Cindy.
Well, the reason that you chose that small of a setback is because you don't want to get challenged on this as far as being exclusionary?
A small setback of the height of the tower or the
breakpoint?
The height
of the tower and then the buffer.
Right.
There's the setback. And the reason for that, you're thinking, is that you don't want to be challenged, correct?
Always. We don't want to be challenged on...
Well, I'm just trying to figure out what the thinking was instead of just saying, because it was 500, maybe going to like 200 or...
I don't know if there's anything you want to add, but I think, you know, you don't want your regulations to be interpreted as arbitrary. You want to have...
Yeah, it can't just be an arbitrary number you pick. This is the language in here is very standard. Typically what happens for residential areas, they need a fairly large parcel of property to put the pole, to put the ground equipment that goes with the pole. It has to be, your code also requires that co-locations go on that pole. So they have to have a fairly substantial leased area. And what happens is that the pole as it's designed, if it's breakpoint technology, law of physics, the way it's defined, it will fall within its leased area. It's not going to fall outside of that. And that's typically what we've seen. So the language that's in the code is what's standard and is what's acceptable by the wireless industry. If you pick something arbitrary, it gives them something to sink their teeth into.
And I suppose, depending on what zoning area this is located in, we have been thoughtful and considerate of how we've set setbacks for those various zonings. So honoring those setbacks gives us a leg to stand on in defending that buffer, I suppose.
Right, just another use in that district.
Right.
Ma'am.
That's exactly my concern, though. When we now look at potentially changing a setback requirement, suppose we were to want to change the zoning in an area so maybe there was no setback for whatever reason in a commercial area, say, when we wanted buildings to be able to come right up to the sidewalk or whatever. Now we're going to have to consider that it has the spillover effect of eliminating the requirement for that buffer for these towers. If it's tied to that setback, would we be better off if it wasn't tied to something where we might inadvertently eliminate the buffer or a portion of it?
I guess what I'm hearing is, if let's say we look at like the downtown business district where you don't have a setback requirement, so the minimum setback would be, if the tower is 100 feet, 100 feet.
Right.
You're saying maybe establish something that's more like 100 feet plus a standard
something.
Number, 10 feet. Or
not to be less than 6 feet, which is the minimum setback in any zoning.
I think we have the underlying district.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we've got the minimum side or rear yard setback of the zoning district. Or you could add language, you know, plus the minimum side or rear yard requirements of the district, but in no case less than.
Yeah.
That's what I would like.
Maybe that less than is the minimum setback of any zoning district or something. I don't know. 6 feet, I think. You'd always
something.
Something. Yeah. Something that wasn't tied to the setback in case there was no setback requirement.
Yeah, because that could be scary.
I would be comfortable leaving this meeting and knowing that you guys will come up with something that both Cityscape and the staff feels is defendable, whether that's 6 feet or for the specific typical zoning in that of the subject lot, or an absolute number of like a 6 feet or something. So I mean I'd be comfortable, but the concept I think is something that's worth.
Could be a percent. I mean, height plus 10, height plus 8. I mean,
that's a good idea.
Far from arbitrary at that point, I would think.
Yeah, because it's tied to its physical characteristics.
All right.
I mean, that's defensible because it's tied to the physical characteristic of the thing you're objecting.
Right. Yeah.
So there is a nexus there.
Yeah, height plus 10 I have seen. So
wouldn't that be better than the setback then?
Well, it could be height.
Yes, in some cases, it could be height
plus setback, not to be less than 10 feet.
Not to be less. Not to be less.
Because if the setback's 20, why not have it 20?
So that's just the minimal. Okay, yeah, we're all talking at the same time. Sorry. But, yeah, I mean, again, we're thinking out loud. So, yeah, I mean, not to, you know, not to, that's a minimum set.
A bare minimum.
Bare minimum, not, you know, right. But obviously if a district, zoning district goes beyond that, that's what applies.
Could you say existing zone setback or 10% of tower, whichever is greater?
Right.
Something like that.
But I think you need a minimum concept in there.
Yes, you need to have a minimum.
Not to be less than.
Not to be
whether
less
it's 10
than
feet or 6 feet.
Or set kind of based on its physical characteristics.
I would be comfortable with 10.
Good luck.
Not right.
Luck on that one. But you get the gist.
Not really.
Sorry.
Okay.
Let's put it on me.
Not possible.
So I'm gathering there's consensus to have a setback equal to the district's regulations or no less than.
But
either a percentage of the tower or
its physical characteristics. Yes, that's
or
height.
A standard number, 10 feet or
yeah.
something.
Whatever you two come up with.
Okay.
As long as there's some minimum concept, I think I'd be comfortable.
But I think if it's tied to the physical characteristics of this tower, that's definitely dependent. Yes.
Just a little confused on this and the breakpoint technology. So we're talking about the height of the tower or the breakpoint technology point, right? So the tower could be 100, but it's breakpoint. I don't know what those are, but it could be, let's say, 50. So we're really talking 50 feet plus the buffer that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not 100. So it's not the height of the tower. It's the height of the tower or the breakpoint.
If it's designed with that technology.
If
right.
it's designed right. with that technology.
We listed there's specific structural requirements that these have to be built to, and in that is the very highest, and that's for, I mean, we always put the highest requirement in there, whatever standard it is, and sometimes it changes, but we always make sure it's the highest standard, the ANSI, it's an engineering thing that they look at that for structural capacity, making sure that it is a sound structure.
Now, with the breakpoint technology, don't they all have that?
No, it depends on how it's built. Certain types of tower, monopoles, yes, they do. The lattice towers do not. You know, guide towers do not, just by design of the tower itself. So it's the type of the tower.
Do we have a say in that?
Well, it's part of your siting hierarchy. So, we're talking at the very, very bottom. You have monopole first, lattice second, and guide tower is the very last one there. So they have to prove that any of these others coming before them is not going to be that it's not possible to do. And I mean, most of the time nowadays, I see monopoles being built. I haven't seen a lattice tower being built in a very long time. Unless it's super rural, and their people are just dying for service.
And breakpoint technology only applies to lattice.
No, monopole.
Only applies to monopole.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a couple other questions in no particular order, but the historical district provisions and restrictions. I didn't read this to discern how that was different than regular, but is there any reason why the restrictions we do in the historic district cannot be applied throughout the city? I'm just not sure exactly what those are and why they wouldn't be applicable everywhere.
Well, we have the ability to deny a permit based on aesthetic considerations.
Right.
So it really has to be compatible with its surroundings. So in the historic district, we have very different light poles along State Street than we do on Randall Road or in our commercial shopping centers. So applying a uniform standard throughout the city might not really conceal the small wireless facilities.
Is it written in such a way that we have those same rights on non-historic district property? It's just against a different aesthetic background.
Right.
Okay.
We have the right to require them to be concealed.
So we aren't giving anything up outside the historic district. It's just a different physical look, right?
Right.
So am I reading this right, that there can be no non-concealed towers on any residential zone property? Is that right? So they all have to be concealed, whether that's Good Templar, Wheeler, or whatever.
Letter B.
Where are you reading?
I think I saw Elizabeth shake her head yes. Is that correct?
Yeah, okay. I believe so. Which section are you?
I was on the well-drafted siting preferences. I really like those. And in the order of priority, I was about two-thirds of the way down, where it says you've got, I think, a little F, concealed freestanding towers on non-public property in any business zone and other zone districts. So that could be resi, but I don't see other zone districts listed for the non-concealed tower. So that's why I'm assuming concealed are only allowed on residential zone property, non-concealed or not, by implication.
I believe that's how it was written.
And where I'm looking at, David, is 2F Romanet 3 on public property in any business zone or other zone districts, which would include residential.
I
think that implies you can't have them on residential.
Or other zone districts, which would be residential.
Right.
They have to be concealed, is what I think the implication is,
right.
Which I think is good. I just wanted to confirm that.
And then non-concealed is further down.
Further down, right.
Right, but that reference is only,
right.
It doesn't refer to other zone districts, so by implication you couldn't do a non-concealed on a residential zoning.
Yeah, they would have to prove why they cannot conceal it.
Right.
It would be very hard for you
right.
to say they can't. Yeah.
Okay, something a little more innocuous, signage. It talks about the only informational data can be put on there. Is there anything to address, you know, this? It should be able to be read by a technician or someone looking for a particular tower. It shouldn't be able to be read from my bedroom window, right? I mean, the font size and stuff, is there some control there so that it's appropriate for the user who's trying to identify it, to service it or whatever, so it's not an eye test for my bedroom window.
The signage
right?
is typically on the ground compound itself. There's
FCC requires that if it's, depending on the height, but 100 foot, it does not need to be registered for the ASR, what's called ASR. So typically it's a small sign that's on the gate that tells who owns the tower,
right.
who to call in case of an emergency, that sort of thing. And it's all usually only on the gate.
And that's what I would expect.
Right.
Are we able to control that if somebody wanted to put a big, you know, two poles in the ground with a bigger sign that somewhat advertises their own business or something within their containment area or something? Are we able to control that?
It is written in there that it's only allowed for specifically
right. informational,
who owns the tower, emergency purposes only. It is stated in there as such.
And I think we would probably see markups of what that would look like when somebody comes for an approval, right?
Right. When an application comes through, there will be a site plan, and it will. And part of that is the signage. They have to show what the signage will look like
okay.
as well.
Can several companies share a pole?
That's called co-location, and it is a preference within the regulations so that they can share a pole. So
we don't have to have several poles.
That's correct.
Because that would get
right
icky.
It would get icky, for sure.
Moving down to sounds, no unusual sounds should be emitted. And it finishes up with sound levels shall not exceed 0.65 decibels as measured at the property boundaries. Just for my benefit, what is 0.65 decibels? Would that be like
it's
me talking
this,
now? Or?
It is. It's about conversational speaking.
Okay.
A little bit louder than the AC going right now.
Okay.
That's including for small cell, our refrigerators.
That is correct.
It's pretty loud for a refrigerator in right outside my bedroom window. I mean, I get it for a 100-foot tower that's set back
right.
150 feet. But anyway, that's a Title VIII question,
right,
I guess.
Right.
I keep getting... getting off on that, but you know,
it's usually
still concerned.
I've done a lot of assessments throughout the country and seeing what facilities are being built as far as small cell. And the only time I've even heard them is if it's on a gen, if it's like
generator.
A generator kicks in, and
right.
and so I haven't heard the sounds, honestly. So just to alleviate some of that,
it helps.
Yeah.
Brad mentioned setback again. That just made me think of something. We're setting back the tower from the property line, so if it falls, it hits within the property. Is there does the tower have to be set back from livable structures or inhabitable structures on the subject property so that it cannot hit, you know, a picnic shelter at Good Templar Park or a home or a business? I'm just curious if there's a setback from the occupiable structure.
It has to be set back from being able to hit anything.
Okay. And that's clear the way it's written?
Yes.
Okay. If you go to Section 11, replacement facilities, I'm just curious. Let me read my own notes here. I wrote to myself, if an old tower was breakpoint technology and replaced with a non-breakpoint technology, would we be able to apply the higher setbacks? Because it says here you can replace kind of in kind, but if it's a different type of structure, you wouldn't want to replace a breakpoint that's 50 feet from a property line with a non-breakpoint technology just because the facility's there and it's grandfathered in as a location.
Right. Well, you're building, you know, the way they build them, it's only improving on that technology of it. It wouldn't be taking away from it. And so you do have a little play of if it's a monopole, it would be designed with breakpoint technology. That's standard in all of the builds that they do. And the replacement, there is a function in there that if it's a non-concealed, you can then require to be concealed, which is a good thing.
Right.
So
we would, but if somebody did come for some reason and they had a tower that they wanted to replace that was either slightly taller or wasn't breakpoint for some reason,
right.
we would have the ability to impact the approval of that based on where it would then fall.
That's correct.
Okay.
You would.
So we could say that tower is no longer good for this specific site on this parcel. You have to find another site or go back to the same technology.
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
That's all I had, I think. Thank you.
Anything else? All right. I think that's it from the commission. So now it's going to be open for public comments because the hearing is still open. David, are we going to do it by order of sheet or we just call people up?
Do we need to swear people in?
Probably any new people. I don't know. We need Fred here.
We need Fred. I mean.
Probably not a bad idea.
No, we need Fred.
Oh. Okay. So we have to have a couple for... the item that's before us, 5A. So, Brandon Anderson?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Do we need to swear people in before they speak?
I can swear them in. But everybody please stand. I will swear you in if you want to testify on this one. Raise your right hand, please. Do you swear a testimony you're about to give us is the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Thank you. You may be seated. Okay, so... Number 5A, Brandon Anderson. I'm sorry.
Hello, I'm Brandon Anderson, 328 North 2nd Street. I appreciate your comments today and the research that you've all done. I'm here to speak specifically about the lowering of the restrictions on the cell towers, not the 5G small cell structures. I appreciate your ideas about, you know, trying to create the biggest buffer that we can. And I know that you cannot take health and environmental concerns into consideration. What my concern is, I am not worried about this falling on my house. What I am worried about is the perception, the public perception that these towers are not safe. And I know that you cannot take the actual safety in consideration, but what I'm asking you to think about is the public perception of these towers and how that will affect property values, the businesses that these are located nearby. I'm on Stephen Street, and so if one of these does come in Cemetery or along farther up on Stevens where one was proposed earlier in the year, the perception will be that people will not want to live near those towers. People will not want to buy homes near those towers. I can very well see if, you know, if my kids have a choice of a place to play, I'm not going to send them to the friend's house that lives under the cell tower. I'm going to send them to a different friend's house. So I would like you to, you know, take those things into consideration. We are so thankful for the changes that are happening along Stevens. We love having Playhouse 38 there. We love having Penrose there. We hope that more businesses like that come into Stevens to further just make that area more vibrant. And I know that, you know, when people have a choice of going to a brewery and sitting under a cell tower or going to a brewery and sitting where they're not under a cell tower, I can imagine which one that they would choose. And so if you can think about, you know, land value and that perception and just push back these setbacks as far as you're able to, I think that would be very appreciated by both the residents and the businesses in the area. Again, I'm not nearly as I'm not worried about it falling on my house. I am not as worried about the signage or what they look like. It's not going to be pretty wherever it is, no matter how stealth or concealed or the fancy language that they use for these. But the public perception is that I'm not going to choose a playground or a park that's got a cell tower in it to go to. So if you could just keep that in mind, that would be appreciated.
Yes, John.
Just a response. I think while we're not able to take safety into consideration from, like, radiation and that type of thing, by worrying about how far it can fall and where it will fall and maximizing that like we're doing, that also has the effect of also separating it from residences as much as possible, but for a different reason, I think. So.
Next person is John Brayton. That's okay. I'll trust you.
With a blanket.
In June, we had a proposal for a cell tower to be built on Stevens Street, and they wanted to change the setback from 500 feet to 200 feet, and they wanted to go from 50 feet to 128 feet. And this is a mixed zoning, it was at the Zoning Board of Appeals meeting in June, I think it was. Anyway, I lived right across the street from where they were proposing this. And so my neighbors and I went out and got 128 signatures against it. And we came to the meeting, and it was obvious in the meeting that the Zoning Board of Appeals was against it, and they said that, you know, the City Council was against it. So the people who were representing it, trying to sell it to the city, decided to withdraw their proposal. And so it's still alive somehow, and I thought this tonight was going to be more of the same meeting. And so anyway, I had these signatures. I don't know what to do with them.
Well, you can certainly give them to us. I mean, this meeting is dealing with some things that have happened recently with state law that has required us to make some adjustments to our zoning ordinance. So it's more of a bigger picture type thing. There isn't a specific proposal before us for any tower.
Right.
We haven't received anything. So going forward under the new regulations, if we do get an application for that, it will have to go to a public special use permit.
Oh, so it depends.
Public hearing process will still be in effect.
Okay.
It may not be with the Zoning Board of Appeals. It may be with us, but there will be a public hearing.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Next item, person is Rob Byans, I believe it is.
Spoke last time, too. Same.
Everybody hear me?
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Um,
trying not to repeat anything.
Sir, identify yourself and address.
Please. Oh, sure. Rob Burns, 2000 South Batavia Avenue, Geneva. Not wanting to repeat any unnecessary comments from the last meeting, try to pick up on things that have happened. In the last meeting, several of the commissioners here recommended, at least among yourselves, I don't know if you're all here who made the specific recommendations, that the city council not even vote on the 5G until you had a chance to meet again, because this was so new and confusing and so forth. That obviously fell on deaf ears, possibly for some good reasons. That came up at that meeting, which I watched on television, which appeared to be that there might be some exposure by waiting, which was, I think, one of the questions from this side. And if there weren't any exposure, several aldermen had written, well, we'll postpone if we don't think there are any exposures on the 5G. But some of the consultant comments were there may be some exposure. And I guess if I was sitting there hearing those comments as an alderman, they probably would have lent me toward voting yes, even though I really didn't want to. And that's what happened, I think. Now, that was because we had a specific law and a specific deadline in play. We had our state law, and we had a deadline of August 1. And the question that came up from someone here tonight about could we pass our law afterwards was asked at this meeting, and we didn't know the answer, I think. But at that meeting, the answer was, yeah, you could not pass it and pass it later. But you would have that window of exposure, et cetera, okay? So that's all done. And as I understood what was said, we could still change that ordinance if we wanted to later, but we would be running some risks in the 5G area, okay? And there was also comments at this meeting about separating 5G from the other type of stuff. I think, Brad, you were the first one to mention it almost at the very beginning of the meeting. Could we separate the two issues? Because while there's some overlap, they're quite different. We're talking small cells versus large towers. Okay, everybody remember that. So here we are. So I want to talk about the large towers as a separate issue. So one thing that's different is it seems to me there's no law. Okay, we don't have any state law. There's no deadline of August 1. And because there's no deadline, I wonder why there's a particular rush to get this thing done as quickly as we did the 5G. Why are we rushing? It appears that we were under pressure from the state last time to do something. This time, it seems that because of the pressure from the state, some consultants have suggested that while you're doing that, you might as well look at your overall ordinances and look at them at the same time, which isn't a bad idea, I don't think. But to feel any compunction to do something quickly on the tall towers, I don't know why we should be feeling any pressure to do that. I think we should be taking our time. When this issue came up in some other towns recently, looking at the tall towers, they made some decisions at their committee of the whole to postpone it indefinitely. They wanted to look at it, but the planning group was told, why are we here? There's no urgency. Why are we doing this right now? So I wonder if you should give some consideration to the timing of taking a more thorough look at this. I've studied it as much as layman can, and it's clear that some of you have as well. I think it is still inherently a bit confusing, and therefore some more time spent on it would be time well spent. It appears that the various changes that were made to improve what we can do in terms of siting tall towers and trying to give us more control, they sound very good. Anything that would help in that area would be helpful. The part that comes back is how close are these towers going to be to where people live, okay? And I think it was Cindy at the last meeting, if I recall, one of her first comments was, well, why are we talking 500 feet. Could it be 300? Why are we talking 100 feet? Could it be 300? It seems kind of arbitrary, the distance we're talking about. Tonight, what I seem to be hearing saying is that there's that we don't want something that's arbitrary because we have to worry about being sued. And reading between the lines at the city council meeting, the fear of being sued seems to be the driving force behind this entire cleanup operation that we have tonight. And I don't know enough to know how real the chance of being sued is. And how soon it could come up and what it would really mean. But one way you can assure being sued, if you never want to make an error, you can design something so tight that you'll never have an objection. You'll never have a loan fail if you make the requirements for the borrower so tight. But you're throwing away money by not, you know, being a little bit more generous in loaning the money. I think there's an analogy here. So if you want to make it 100 feet or 80 feet, if it break point, why don't you make it 30 feet or 10 feet? Isn't that arbitrary? That's just as arbitrary as some other number. So what I'd like to suggest is there may be, I don't know why 300 feet might not work or 400. Switching to another comment that's related, when I saw this picture the other day when this thing came up, I think it was Friday, my first reaction was, what am I doing on my computer? I can't even get anything to show properly. I looked at it, I'm seeing this great blob is up there. And over, finally, and my machine was trying to, like, separate it out. And when I tried to blow it up, it, you know, I couldn't handle it. And then I went back, I guess I gave up. I looked at it Sunday or something, and I saw this little comment up there. I can't see without my glasses. 500-foot buffer. So, David, if I could clarify, I think what you were saying is this map will show that if we use the 500-foot buffer, there's hardly any place in the city that we could site a cell tower. Correct. Is that in layman's terms, is that correct? Yeah. Okay. And I know one of the areas might include some property, if I'm reading right, but I can't tell because I can't break the map down enough to see it clearly. So here's a question for you that I'd be curious. What if can you hit a button here right now and show me what that would be at 400 feet? Okay. Or 300 feet? Okay. Well, whether you can do it now really isn't the question. But is it possible to show, you showed us the other extreme was what we have now, I think. So there must be different maps that would show up if you hit 200 feet, 300 feet, or some other number in between. And I just wonder whether there's somewhere in between that might be worth considering, particularly if we took a little longer to think about it than tonight, okay, or sending it on to the city council. I throw that out for your consideration. Some of my other comments have already been answered, so let me just look quickly. The question that I think, John, you had on 2F3, could I ask that one again? Because I couldn't follow it, the wording there. This had to do with the siting preferences. And when I read it again today, I circled it. So 2F3 is under concealed freestanding towers, and number 3 was on non-public property in any business zone or other zone districts.
Right.
But I don't know who would be the best person to answer that. Is it you, David, or
maybe the consultant for clarifying?
Yeah, just want to know what it means. I'm sorry, I can't understand. Couldn't follow. I wasn't sure.
So in the list of preferences, a concealed freestanding tower would be, the third option would be on private property in a business zone or other zone, so or a residential zone. A non-concealed tower, if you go down to letter H, does not provide the same language in letter 3. It says, on private property or non-public property in any business zone. It does not include the or other districts. So that by implication means a non-concealed tower is not allowed in a residential zone.
Maybe there's another way of making that a little more clear with an edit. That's what it means. But does other zone, do you need, on that line, could it just say in any zone?
says in any business zone or other zones. And I didn't know whether it meant a non-public property in any business zone, or is it only on non-public property in any business zone or other zone?
It could be tweaked.
It's a little confusing, maybe it could be, whatever it means, it could be clarified. Thank you. One last comment I made. I have some generators at some commercial properties that we own, and I don't know what type of generator is assumed to be working near a cell tower, but I assure you they can be very loud. I mean, extremely loud. So it depends on the size, et cetera. So that one should be looked at somehow, maybe define it a little bit more carefully. And yes, they're only going to come on if something goes wrong with something. That's true. But maybe someone could just look at that a little more carefully to make sure that we know what we're talking about. So, and overall, my overall comment would be just a request that maybe we could slow this down a little bit before moving it on, because we're not under the same pressures we were at before. We're looking at something that hopefully is going to protect us for a long time. And making something so tight that you're not going to be sued is not necessarily the right answer. There's probably something in between that makes sense. Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you.
David or Elizabeth, do you guys have a response to that point about delaying and what implications that would have?
There are still items within Title 11 that pertain to the small cell,
right,
and cross references to Title 8.
Right.
So that's the reason they were being advanced at the same time. I guess I would have to go through and break that out to see what amendments we could make just pertaining to small cell and those cross-references to make sure that we have the same protections in place on private property that we now have in place on public property.
Right.
So one of the things that we're seeing is the wireless industry is being very aggressive. And you're right, it not necessarily because with the threat of being sued. I don't think that you guys have any of that going on right now. However, the hierarchy and the way that the code is written, it is protecting the city in a lot of ways. What's happening is nowadays there are more and more people who are using wireless devices. A lot of homes are going wireless. They're getting rid of landlines. And so it's becoming a capacity issue. If I'm on my phone and my iPad and my computer and we're all using this, what happens is the capacity becomes an issue. And I know that we look at it as property values. And look, I don't work for a tower company. I don't get anything out of it. But from the trends of what we're seeing across the country is that capacity is becoming an issue. And I know that no matter what park I'm playing at with my kids, I want to call 911 and get through if something happens. So that's one of the things and one of the issues. And I know they're not pretty, but they can be disguised, they can be tucked away, and that's what the code is designed to do. The height is not an arbitrary height. We picked the height for a purpose because that's what we're seeing being built right now across the country. So it wasn't just let's pick a height randomly. And it's what you don't want to happen is for – you don't want to be challenged by any means, because if that's all you're allowing, you will find yourself in trouble with – because of federal law. So there are – I mean, it is a – do you have to do it today? No, you don't. But I think that not doing it puts you more at risk than doing it. I think you're very compliant with law, and I think that through the application process, I think the residents would see that you guys have a lot of protections in place that isn't just by changing the buffering and changing the setbacks. It's not going – there's so many other steps that are in play and in place to protect it without leaving you exposed.
All right. Thank you.
Excuse me.
Oh, Cindy, you have a question?
Yeah. So by waiting, so if we do approve this,
So the problem is with waiting is that you've got cross-references to your Title VIII as preferences. If you don't have that, then if you do have someone come in, pretty much there's a lot of hoops that, well, I don't know that they'll ever get approved based on the setbacks alone, which could put you at risk.
So if we did approve this and then we decide we don't like it, could we become more stringent on it?
Less stringent.
Well, so what this the code does is in the way that we wrote it and that we recommended it be written, and it's based on your input too. It's not just, okay, yeah, you have to do it our way. But what the way that we always write them is to take you right up to the line as stringent as you can possibly be and still be compliant with state and federal law. So that and our interpretations of things, if there's any ambiguity in the or any state versus federal, we make sure that the interpretation takes you right up to that line so you can be as stringent as possible. And it's written as such. I don't think if you adopt this code that you're going to see this influx of people, okay, now we're going to have a tower on every corner. I don't think that's going to happen. There's still quite a few steps that they have to go through.
They have to demonstrate need and other
absolutely
technical processes that are part of it.
That's right.
And that's not in the code today. So
those hoops right
aren't even in there.
That's right.
How many towers could we see?
Oh, I wouldn't know unless we did a study on it. I mean, we could, you know, we would have to see what you have. You know, we do have a master plan program that we do where we come in and we see what infrastructure you have, where the gaps in service are,
but
that sort of thing.
Some of that is also trade secrets because you would have to know Verizon wireless.
Well, the way
connectivity in the town to figure out what the coverage is.
So what we do,
we don't have that information.
Right. What we do is we come in and we'll do a process where we do assessments of every site.
Yeah.
And we have computer modeling the same as the industry does. And no, it's not a perfect science because not every carrier is on every single tower or every single infrastructure, but it does show you where the gaps are and it shows you areas in which this is the next area.
This is
the possible gap. You're going to see this is where they're going to come in. And this is the existing infrastructure that's in place. And you know now that they can use this building, even though Verizon may not be on that building, that is a potential for co-location on a building versus building a new tower. So there are ways in which to do it. But it is not a perfect science because there's no way to do it unless without the computer modeling. For
wouldn't
each carrier.
It behoove us to know this before we make these decisions?
That's a city decision. But I think that what you'll find is that the ordinance, oftentimes we do ordinances prior to doing any type of master plan so that but it does let you know exactly where the infrastructure is needed.
Thank you. I believe it's John Hunter is next.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I wanted to say thank you for listening to my comments.
Sir, your address.
Sorry, John Hunter, 919 Red Wing.
Thank you.
May I approach with some documents that I have?
Absolutely.
To submit?
It's all one packet?
Yes.
Okay.
They're all the same.
Thanks, Celeste.
Thank you. I'll just explain what it is while it's being handed out. It's a report from the International Association of Firefighters, and it's a position paper regarding the installation of wireless communication facilities adjacent or near fire stations. And it's well documented, it's well referenced, and there's a lot of information in there regarding where our firefighters are even looking at this issue from. And I can say that one thing I heard in the city council meeting was that the police chief and the fire chief only got a cursory examination of what was passed last week. So I wanted to just get that out there so that you can kind of see that, you know, it's not just from the residential side of things or the residents themselves, but also the firefighters. So having said that, I had some questions, and Mr. Burns covered a lot, so that'll certainly shorten the time. One of the questions that I had was, and this is like clarification. I'm trying to get the scope of this in my mind. And so as I understood it, and I think this has been clarified through Mr. Burns, but as I understood it, that only the Title VIII ordinance was affected by the state law, and that prompted them to do a review of your overall ordinances, Title XI as well, which led to this. So that's something, just a point I wanted to get clarification on, if I'm understanding that correctly.
I think in general, you want to comment on that, Dave?
Sure.
I think the Small Wireless Deployment Act was the impetus for the changes to both Title VIII and XI, but there are portions of Title XI that do deal with small wireless facilities, allowing them on private property, defining what that is, and that they have to comply with the review procedures and design standards that are cross-referenced in Title VIII. So primarily in Title VIII, but there's also defining it here and noting that it's allowed on private property.
Thank you. And I was kind of referring to the large towers, though. I put the 5G stuff, the small wireless, aside, and I'm focusing on the large towers at this point. But thank you. Then the next question is, are all residential zones allowed? So we have, what, 7 or 8 different types? And so are they all allowed? Okay. And then same for industrial and commercial, every type. Okay, thank you. Has there been, as I understood it, the last time this particular title or this section of it was changed was in 97. Has there been any legal challenges to the city regarding, you know, wireless as far as exclusionary goes?
I'm not aware of any formal challenges to the city. As was noted earlier this evening, we had an application before the Zoning Board of Appeals a few months ago. There was some comments from that applicant that there could be a potential for a challenge based on our regulations, but they decided to proceed with the variation application instead of going that route. So I do feel like there's some exposure as we're currently situated.
Okay, so the next question that I had, and it may be for the consultant, are there any references to minimum setback in the state law regarding this Title XI?
The state law, no, the state law was referencing for small wireless facilities.
Understood. So they're not mandating that there be a minimum setback or anything of that nature?
For this, no.
Okay, thank you. And so then the last question, and I think Mr. Burns covered it, but I will just reiterate. So is the fear of legal challenge to the city what is really driving these changes? Because it just seems that that's the only reason that we can see that, you know, that you would make such a huge difference in your setback.
I mean, David can comment on that.
I would not say that that's the only driver. Again, the impetus for this was the Small Wireless Deployment Act. We took an overview of all our wireless communication regulations, trying to do a comprehensive review. Again, as you noted, they had not been updated since 1997. So trying to make sure that we were in compliance with state and federal law and that we did not have areas where we had exposure to legal challenges. And I don't see that as really a negative. I see that as something that's really our responsibility to make sure that we're not facing legal challenges on land use, especially ones that we are pretty certain we would lose and wind up with a tower exactly where we don't want them because of the regulations we have in place.
Would you care to add to that?
One of the other pieces, too, is there has been other legislation that's come up. In 2012, part of the Middle Class Tax and Job Relief Act, there were regulations that came in, and your code then, and also the code that you had in existence since 97, there were things in there that doesn't protect your city. So there were some things that we were able to add in, like the siting hierarchy and that sort of thing, that offers more protection than what you had in your existing code as well.
Cindy, did you have something?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so then that, thank you for clarifying that. The main point that I wanted to make is that I don't think we're underserved by towers here. And, in fact, on this map, I would like to be able to see the location of the currently installed towers and whatever information we might be able to get from that to show that there really isn't areas in the town where we're getting dropped calls and dropped out, even in times of, you know, busy, you know, high traffic periods, I should say. And I really haven't heard, and I think it would have been pretty big news if somebody tried to call 911 and couldn't get through. I don't think there's been any incidents like that in our town. So I just wanted to kind of address that because the main argument is that, oh, you're underserved and you know, you need it here and here. How many is too many? How many is just enough? And so this map that I can see, it really doesn't show that, because if it was the coverage map on AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, it would show that we're completely covered here and that there isn't any unused areas. I mean, I think that the whole state of Illinois is covered, if you look at their coverage maps. So I just wanted to point that out. And
excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
I want to argue with you for a second. There's places in Elburn, there's a barn out in Elburn, mm-hmm. that if you go down this hill and in the barn,
right,
no coverage.
Understood. But we're talking about Geneva,
right,
here.
So
and,
what
and
I'm saying
so
is in Geneva, no problems.
Thank
but
you. Right.
Out there,
and it's possible, right? They could, they might stand to use one, you know, have
they
a cell
use
tower.
One.
And they have plenty of room there, you know, to put them.
They do.
With a large setback. So I just wanted to, you know, reiterate some of my comments from before, is that, you know, I understand that by the state or by the Telecommunications Act, you're not allowed to take certain things into consideration, but these are things that are important to the residents, and even though, you know, the cell tower might be unsightly and that, there's also a stigma to living close to one, and if there's some people that want to come to the city and they see that these properties are too close to cell towers, they're going to keep looking. And so I just think that the 500-foot setback is still a good setback. And, in fact, if it was me, I would ask for it to be much more, 1,000, 1,500 feet. But as the councilman or Commissioner Mead had said, that 500 feet sort of served as the buffer zone to not only protect you from physical danger, but also from the potential danger. The problem is that there's not enough empirical evidence. And if when you read the firefighters' report, it's based on that. They are waiting for a sufficiently scientific and conclusive study so that they can change their position on the matter. So that was pretty much all I wanted to say. Everything else has been said, and I want to thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the last person on the list is Steve Condio. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak on this? Yes, ma'am.
One more question. Again, Brandon Anderson, 328 North 2nd. It seems like there's still some confusion, which is alarming to me, as to which parts of the text amendments to Title 11 are required by state law. The amendments in relation to cell towers are not part of the state law.
No confusion on that.
There's, we feel like that's everyone's
confusion.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Any other comments from the public? Okay.
Some discussion, I guess?
Certainly.
I wish we could address safety issues, but we're not allowed to do that. I think that over time, if there's more empirical evidence, those are the types of issues that we look for our state legislature and our national government to hopefully hear and resist whatever pressures they have from lobbying efforts to try to institute some of those safety concerns down to the states and for the citizens. Unfortunately, we don't have that ability. So what we have the ability is to deal with land use and location and proximity to different zones. My personal feeling is that it's in our best interest to act on this tonight, and that we can always, if there are things related to the tall towers that need to be modified further, I think there's been thoughtful consideration for the setbacks and relying on our consultant and our city staff to come up with an additional not less than buffer. I'm comfortable with leaving that tonight to them to bring forth the city council and committee of the whole. I don't think the impetus for me or for the city, this is my personal view, is a risk of suit. I think the driver is that we want to have an ordinance that if it's challenged, it doesn't make a part of that ordinance, if it's successfully challenged, it doesn't make a part of that ordinance, then basically unenforceable, because then you have the 500-foot, then we have a zero setback with none of the other attributes to it. Or the sight line. If we postpone this and we were challenged in the interim, I just think that there's greater risk in not acting on this thoughtful legislation and ordinance put forth by staff than there is in waiting and further considering it. I look forward to reading the stuff that Mr. Hunter brought, and I will be certainly interested as a citizen to understand how our legislators are responding and taking some of this evidence as it's developed over time and acting on it at a different level outside of the municipal level. So,
yeah, Mike.
Oh, ma'am.
Whatever.
She beat me to the buzzer.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure I understood something. Because this has been put before us as a package deal with the 5G and the large towers, is there any way that we can break this out and vote tonight on something to control the 5G? Or would it be, because of the logistics of the whole thing, impossible to do that? You had mentioned there'd be quite a bit of work to try to separate it all, which would mean we wouldn't be able to pass anything before August 1st.
I would hesitate to try to break it out on the fly tonight. A dozen pages here with kind of interweaving regulations and over 47 definitions. I think I'd want to make sure, if that was the will of the commission, that we really took the time to break it out appropriately.
So the choice really is have nothing in place regarding the 5G by August 1st and expose ourselves on that, aside from what was the Title 8, but on Title 11, if we put it off or pass this now, recommend passing this now, and then go back in and perhaps look at the tall tower portion again and make some adjustments there. We could do that.
It's always a possibility, correct?
The and one thing to consider is there's a lot of good things for tall towers in here. Those siding preferences are incredibly thoughtful and hierarchical, and I don't think you've left anything out. And you know, the one thing that we might debate is, do we in the future come back and adjust our setbacks? Is the buffer that you come up with enough, or does it work for us? And do we ask for a similar map like this or something, which would be very tedious to develop? But again, I think there's much more good in this updating it than there is at risk. And in the interim, we're not at risk. We have something, and we can come back and modify it as needed.
That seems like a reasonable approach.
Anything else? Mike, did you have something?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's, you know, everyone in general is kind of thinking, okay, it's going to be worst-case scenario where there's going to be, an antenna on every street corner. And we thought about it the other way with the technology coverage or the cell coverage that we do have here. You know, it's fantastic anywhere in Geneva. Could it be a case where, applicants do come in and obviously they have to prove that A, B, and C have to be accomplished in order to put one in, right? Could they come in and say, no, coverage is fine, denied. There's no reason for it. I mean, and it could end up being 3, right, instead of 30 or whatever number it is. Is that another way to, you know, to possibly look at it? I don't know if it's a question more for the cityscape side, but if the coverage is already there, obviously you're not going to put in redundant systems just for the sake
of
it.
Right, and they can't
nor would the applicant. I mean, it would be
profitable. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. So from you would look at it from an engineering perspective, and so what would happen is it's not just about coverage; it's about what they call capacity. And so what happens is at significant times when everyone's either driving home. What's capacity is when everyone's using their device at the same time. And so, but there's so many steps that are in place that they do have to, you can't ask for their business decision, but you can ask, they have to demonstrate why they need the service. So they're for a new tower. So sometimes what happens is they'll modify it, and if there's, because the way that it's been written, sometimes upgrading an existing facility is all they need to do, and that's what will happen. And the small cells, the 5G, the small cell facilities, is what's going to be used to fill in for that capacity. If you guys have good coverage here now, I don't anticipate a lot of tall towers coming in. There may be a need for one or two to anchor in some of the smaller facilities that are needed. And the small cell facilities, 5G, is what's needed for it to fill in for capacity issues. So, but it's an engineering, it is all a formula that gets looked at from an application when they submit their application for a new site.
Thank you.
Before you sit down,
sure.
Good question. I just had the back of my yard dug up, and they were putting in 5G.
They're probably putting in fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's like the what's called backhaul, and backhaul is either done via fiber optic, or it's done wirelessly with a microwave. Probably because you're a suburban area here, fiber is what's needed for fast service. So it's delivered fast. So it's a backhaul for what's needed.
So then we don't need the other stuff.
No, you do. For a wireless, so you have to have an antenna that's above the ground that shoots out a RF signal. The fiber is what kind of connects each to, it's all an engineering formula. It's what connects each of them together, if you will. I know that I'm not explaining it perfectly. I'm not an engineer. So, but it is, fiber is needed to connect the wireless antennas. And so fiber is also needed to connect. Sometimes it may be connecting to your home for I don't know if you have like Xfinity that up here. If you have that, a lot of times they're using fiber. AT&T uses fiber. They all use fiber for various reasons. The city uses fiber for their communications as well. So, but the wireless antennas have to be above ground. So I, one other thing, too. I know that the setback seems scary, going from 500 down to what appears to be much, much smaller. But honestly, what happened by the other steps that are in place, it's almost like you have to trust those other steps that will make up for the less setback. It's all works together. It's not just one piece of your code. It all works together. So it's really hard to just cherry pick out this one thing to focus on, because you are more, you are covered and better protected with this, the new code that's proposed, than you are with this 500 foot setback. So I don't know if that makes sense, but it is, I know it sounds scary, but it really is, trust the process of the actual code itself. So, because those protections are in place. So.
Okay, thank you.
To Brad's point about more towers, these are tall towers you're talking about.
Yeah.
So economically, too, I think if they, what company's going to spend the money to install a 100-foot tower if they really don't need it, right? So I'm certain we're going to have more towers in town, but I don't think we're going to be blanketed. I would be shocked if we were blanketed by tall towers. Right? So.
Yes, Brad.
I just want to say I think we've done a really good job with the public input, Cityscape, our discussion. And I just went from complete confusion at the beginning of the meeting 2 weeks ago to a point where I feel pretty clear and confident what we're doing tonight. And so, I think everybody, I appreciate what David's done and all the articles and all the literature and everything. And it seems to me like there's the 5G issue, which really doesn't seem to be much. And we know the will of the city council pretty much from the vote on Title 8 the other night. And now we're talking about tall towers. And I think we've kind of really come down to the setback is really the only issue that we're left with here from what I'm hearing from the public and from what we're talking about. And so I guess I just want to say I think we've kind of distilled it down pretty well at this point. And I'm comfortable, moving forward with the vote on this tonight and not separating them out and doing that. It was daunting last meeting 2 weeks ago, but luckily we put it off for 2 weeks and here we are. And then I guess for me, my only question now, along the lines with what John said, is do we leave the setback issue for staff to do to come up with something for City Council for next Monday, or do we make a recommendation for City Council for next Monday?
You know, when I was saying I was comfortable with the determination between being made between staff and Cityscape, it's because I'm not nimble in knowing what the minimum setbacks are in the different zones, but I would be comfortable with the built-in buffer that they've talked about, plus the height of the tower, with a not to be less than concept. And if we approve that, and they'll be getting applications. If that becomes an issue, staff's going to know that we need to revisit that and maybe set a different one going forward. We'll have addressed 3 or 4 or 5 of these, and if it's not working, I think the onus would be on staff to say we need to come back and revisit this portion of Title 11 again, right? So, we could come up with a minimum, but I also think we'd have to let, I'm not comfortable that I know what would be defensible, where Cityscape and the city would be more adept at saying, hey, a minimum of 10% or a minimum of 10 feet or 6 feet is what we need, because it's defensible.
What's the rational basis?
Real quick before David jumps in,
sure.
Are you saying that the motion might include with a we move forward as, all this stuff with a concept that
I was going to read the motion
the exact line.
And say, with the addition of a concept of not less than a certain buffer distance determined between city staff and its consultant Cityscape. And then
great.
If we don't like it, we can adjust it later, but it's important that we have something in there, I think, to have that concept.
The intent, yeah. Yeah.
Right,
just, to that point, I think the direction I was taking from the commission earlier, I was going to go back and look at what those side and rear yard setbacks across all the districts and really try to come up with what's really an average across residential and industrial and commercial zones and see what that is.
And you'd look to your consultant and say, is that defensible and not arbitrary,
yeah, I mean,
right?
It has a basis.
Right.
I mean, it has...
Right.
We're not making up a number. We're not putting 50 feet on it and just calling it a day. Brad, are you following up on that?
I just have one more quick question, and then I think I'm done. Is they can build towers on private property within these without a public hearing, right? Never, ever.
No.
So I just wanted to, I kind of knew the answer was never, ever. I just want to clarify that. So every time a tower is built anywhere in the city of any size, of any type, of any technology, will always have a public hearing.
Yes. And probably more importantly, they'll have to demonstrate to Dave before they get to us that they have a need. So if they don't get that demonstration, they don't come here.
So I don't feel like anything we're doing tonight means we're never going to hear about these and the towers are just going to start popping up. We are going to know about it. And I guess I wanted to say that, reassuring people in the audience and for the record, too, that...
Yeah, every tower will have to come before us. There will be a public hearing.
Measured against the 9 standards and everything else.
Yeah. So.
And what we have in the new standards of the ordinance that we're writing.
Right, exactly.
Ron.
I don't know. I think we're comfortable with what's going on here. I move that we close the public hearing.
Second.
Moved and seconded.
So second. I'm sorry, Mead. All right, Jadish.
Aye.
Evans.
Aye.
Kasserog.
Aye.
Leidig.
Aye.
Mead.
Aye.
Stevenson.
Aye.
Hacking.
Aye.
Passes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion for approval of text amendments to Section 11-2-2 definitions and 11-3-12 wireless services of the zoning ordinance as presented herein and in the attached draft documents from the city, subject to the city's findings, and to include the concept of adding to the buffer a not-to-be-less-than concept as determined between the city staff and its consultant, Cityscape.
Second.
Moved and seconded.
Hang on, we get names. Okay. Jadish.
Aye.
Evans.
Aye.
Kasserog.
Aye.
Leidig.
Aye.
Mead.
Aye.
Stevenson.
Aye.
Stocking.
Aye.
Passes.
Thank you, everybody, for attending 2 meetings. Appreciate the input. Thank you.
I agree.
Okay, so next item on the agenda is a concept review for 305 Eastside Drive. It's a conceptual review of a proposal to demolish the existing structures and parking areas and construct a new 5-unit town home building with 4 guest parking spaces. The concept would minimally require a zoning map amendment and site plan review. Its location is 305 Eastside Drive, and the applicant is Jerry Capetti. 304.
Hi, my name's Gary Joppy. I live at 845 Citizen Drive, Elburn, Illinois. This is our second time to the Plan Commission. I want to thank you for your time. It was a pretty taxing discussion, so it was a lot to digest, I'm sure. So, regards to 304 Eastside Drive, as you know, we had been in once before and had talked about our desires, and they weren't met very favorably, so we kind of went back and started to brainstorm what we could do and what we couldn't do, and we reached out to several of the aldermen to get some feedback, and they proceeded to visit some of the neighbors that may have had some objections to what we proposed. And so we kind of came away with a plan to, instead of using the existing building, looking at many of the projects that are being developed in the city today, such as the project over at 31 and Stevens, which is a new row home, townhome plan, the one that was built on James Street. So we kind of followed in the footsteps of what we saw happening and what we thought was a good product. Some of the difficulties that we met with our site are identified here, and then also some of the difficulties on the values on the east side of Geneva aren't probably as strong as the west side of Geneva. So when we did our concept plan and through some feedback from Mr. Kilberg, we kind of came up with the plan you're seeing here. This is our site plan, which shows five units. We have certainly ample parking. And although due to the ordinance with that I've discussed with Mr. DeGroote, even though the addresses would face Eastside Drive, the lot 5 is not considered the rear of the property because of a dimensional quirk in that system. The north end of the lot is considered the rear of the property. But, you know, and our thoughts were, as we look at this site plan, as I said, we have plenty of land to make it appeasing for our customers, and we're keeping them somewhere around that 1,800 square foot size, which we had some success on Sandholm, which has similar size units. We built two duplexes, and we were able to merchandise those out. And so that's kind of where we've made our adjustment. It would be new construction. It would be what seems to be favorable to the neighbors. There's no concern about a rental property, so that seemed to be some of the issue as well. And then certainly the architectural value of the property was not thought of that well. That's kind of what we've got here. So we're doing the opportunity to look at kind of a conceptual plan of what we think the building could look like. These would be rear-loaded garages rather than front-loaded garages, so that would be a change. And we may do some different design work. It just depends on, you know, what we settle with our architect. But that's kind of the concept plan, and there, you know, be a nice enhancement for that community over on the side. So welcome any feedback that we can get to help us move this project forward.
No curb cuts on East Side Drive, is that right? Or on?
No. We'll actually be removing a curb cut.
Right, because there is some.
Yeah, there's
right.
A current two-car garage on the north side of the property.
So,
we
right.
Yeah.
So heavier traveled street, removing one curb cut, arguably
yeah.
Safer ingress and egress because you're doing everything from Dotson.
Yeah.
Right?
And, yeah, and currently you'd say there's two curb cuts on Dotson. We'd
yep.
be removing one of those two because there are four parking places on the south, you know, kind of the southeast corner. And then there's
okay.
a driveway that feeds
so,
a garage.
So those would stay?
One would stay.
What? So you would be somebody could turn in, as opposed to turning on Dotson, they could turn into the property from East Side.
No.
No.
No entry from East Side at all.
Okay, I thought you said you're going to leave
currently
one.
There are two.
Oh, the curb cut you're talking about leaving is on Dotson.
Yes.
Okay.
One. There'll be one curb cut total.
Right. One curb cut total on
one
Dotson.
Curb cut total. Mike, roll back to the site plan. As you see on the site plan here,
right.
Currently there is a four parking place
right.
area here, and that will go away.
Okay.
Our only curb cut will be on Dotson, and it will be, you know, significantly further off of East Side Drive.
Which is good.
Yes.
Right.
Which we think is good, so you're pushing it back
a
little bit. And we have enough lot to even, once we get our engineer involved, we have the flexibility, you know, we could push back another, you know, three, 4, 5 feet, depending
sure.
on
okay.
Drainage. Once we do a topo on the property, right. once we kind of get all of our sewer water, storm sewer
okay.
allocated, then we can kind of move forward with.
So the elevation you provided is accurate from, that looks like it's from East Side Drive, except the garages will be rear-loaded, right?
Yeah, they'll be rear-loaded.
So assume those garages
aren't
there.
Yeah,
that'll
be replaced with windows.
Right, that could be a family room or a den down on the lower level behind the garage that faces East Side.
The way it sets out on the site plan is you're looking at units that are roughly 21.5 feet by 38 foot deep.
Okay.
So that'll give you about 700 and some square feet of floor.
Yep.
Then if you remove a 22-foot garage off of that 38,
right.
you have a 16 then by 21 room, which you'd consider the basement or, you know, but it could be an office, could be a laundry room. It just depends on,
right.
you know, who our buyer is, if it's a millennial buyer, if it's a,
right.
You know, more of a buyer that may not require
right.
that space. So
at 1,800 square feet, I would assume the price point would be $350 to $450?
Well, we certainly want to be under $400, and we
okay.
prefer
to
even be under $375. I mean, it, you know.
$200 a foot is $360,
yeah,
right?
So. Right. I mean, that's currently what we're currently getting
right.
in the community.
Right.
You know, we're looking at several developments today that are trying to get substantially more than that.
Right. Right.
And it doesn't look like there's a lot of success. You know, the $300 to $450
right.
foot stuff is,
right.
you know, although, again, 31 and Stevens, those are $895,000 starting price.
Yeah.
So if he gets it, congratulations.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
all I can say. You know, it bears right. nothing on ours. And Campbell Row was able to get, you know, on average of 600 and some thousand.
Right.
We just don't think, from our experience, you know, less than a mile away, we got a, what, 340 or something.
I like having more price point like you're talking about in town. So,
yeah.
We need more of that. The 2 points I think you might face some pushback from the community for a public hearing would be building height and how that blocks some of your neighbors and the setback. I mean, we've had this on other discussions, and how do you play with that? Can you move the building? Can you get more relief on another end to protect the neighbor to the north end? And
mm-hmm.
what does that shadow do? We get the sun coming from the south, so that's going to put your neighbor in some form of lack of sun, theoretically, and does your building, based on its height, I don't think we had a...
Well, it's a 35-foot
right.
height requirement, and so we understand we would need to
right.
meet that.
And that's,
and I think we can meet that.
Well,
so.
And I think meeting it is great. Just what would the impact? 35 might be great, but we'll still get some impact, and we'll have to some things to consider from the public.
Yeah.
So,
and I can't tell you the height of the building that's there already.
Right.
It could be, you know, because
again, doubt if it's 35, but
it's not 35.
It's 20 maybe or 22.
No, it's way more than 20.
More than that?
Yeah,
okay.
Because it's half of the basement is out of the floor, so it's an 8-foot basement. So there's 4 foot out.
And you got 2 floors.
And you got 16 foot of floor, and then you got a 1 foot separation on each floor, and then you got a roof. So it's got to be about 26.
Okay.
So, I mean, a rough estimate. So.
Sidewalks?
Pardon?
Are you going to put in sidewalks?
They're there.
You're going to keep the sidewalks?
Going to keep the sidewalks.
Gonna both
try
streets?
To keep as many
busy
sidewalks
in the morning for school.
Yeah.
Very busy corner.
Yeah, I don't think there's a sidewalk
yeah. well, a school.
On the...
Yeah, right. Yeah, Harrison Street School
yeah.
is
very, very busy in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And the fire station.
Yeah.
Okay.
The sidewalk is not...
On Dots, on this...
Side on, of Dots, it's across the street. The fence,
yeah.
The fire department.
So the normal crossing would be from... People on East Side Drive would cross Dots and then take the sidewalk to the school, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there's no additional sidewalk going down that...
It would be a sidewalk to nowhere, right?
Yeah, yeah, it'd be a sidewalk to kind of nowhere. So, and then as far as the other thing we'd look to do is we have quite a few mature trees. We would try to make sure that we could maintain as many of those as possible. Sewer location is on Dots, and water location is on the west side of East Side Drive. So. No real disturbance to get to the utilities. storm sewers available also on one of those streets as well, so we can get all of that worked out. And we think that that particular site could provide a really nice buffer for certainly the people purchasing the units, because we could create a little dog walk area, and there's a lot of different things we could do that could enhance that property with the amount of real estate that we have open back there.
Yes, ma'am.
I think this is far superior to the last time we saw you folks here, so I commend you for going back to the drawing board on this. I also like the changes from the rendering here to having the rear-loaded garages and not having the curb cuts on East Side Drive. I think that makes softens the impact of this large building being there on East Side Drive to have it landscaped across the front rather than a lot of driveways. So my general impression is that this is something worth having us look at and be happy to see again in more detail.
Sure. Yeah, and I agree. I think that, we're looking at the engineering study as well and then cosmetically making sure that we get the height correct and those types of things. And I think we can accomplish most of that. And then keeping our price point as a value because, when we built a single-family house on Howard, we took us a year to sell that house. We didn't get what they got on the west side, so that's really implanted in our minds because for us to do this project, we have to step out of our comfort zone as well. This is a million-dollar project for us, so we want to make sure that, things I've mentioned to David, as a person who's working in your community, I'm seeing a lot of vacancies on Route 38, and it's starting to concern me that the downtown has got a lot of storefronts that aren't full. And so I brought it to his attention and asked, what do you see? What's going on? So those are things that we're looking at because, I don't want to live in one of the units and have three or four vacant either. So.
Yeah, Brett?
Just kind of a general question. There'll be a new strategic plan, I think, that'll be proposed soon. Does that have any implications for what this property is going to be designated for as opposed to what it is now?
The drafts I've seen don't really have implications for this property. It's more broader goal, community goals, than it is specific sites and land uses.
Nice job.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll continue to massage a little bit and try to move it forward and maybe try to get our plan, hopefully at this point, feel comfortable spending some money with an architect because that's what it's going to take. And, the community has some comments that they'd like to make.
We do have some.
To hearing what they say.
First item on the person on the list is Carl Sanfada.
My name is Carl Sifonda. I live at 1013 Dunston Road. I'm here representing my wife, who owns 111 East Side Drive. I have some questions for the staff. The city council turned down the R7 rezoning, right?
Correct.
Okay. And this is a single zoning lot?
This would be one zoning lot, correct.
Okay. And just as it's zoned, R3, how many units could be built on a single zoning lot in R3?
On any single zoning lot, you're only allowed one principal building, but I believe there's enough area here where there could be more than one R3 zoning lot.
How would you do that if it's a single zoning lot?
You would subdivide it into multiple parcels.
It's already two parcels because it has two.
It's a single zoning lot. It was built as a single family house, right? All the property, both lots.
Correct. But
you don't change that.
You can.
How do you do that?
If you demolish the existing structure and you have enough area, a zoning lot has minimum lot frontage requirements and area requirements.
I think you're wrong, David. And how many off-street parking spaces per unit in an R3?
You need two for each dwelling unit.
Okay. So with respect to what we have here, the applicant paid $172.5, I think he testified, in a foreclosure. Is there some recommendation for some use that isn't five units?
We have not made a staff recommendation on the use. This is a concept review.
Well, what would the staff's reaction be? Could we have no variances, and could we have less units?
Those are some of the questions I've highlighted for the commission that I was hoping to be able to address after the public comment period.
Well, I mean, being a lawyer, courts don't give advisory opinions. Apparently, you do. You're not held to your opinion here tonight on any future consideration of these issues.
I'm not understanding.
Well, the commission, if it said we think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they came back and you didn't like it, you're not bound by a decision made here tonight.
That's correct. This is informal feedback and direction on how to proceed.
No decision.
And with respect to the price point at $360,000, this isn't low-income housing.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Next person on the Dan and Anna, I believe, Farnari. I'm sorry, I can't read the last name. For me. Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm not good at this, so bear with me. I wrote everything down.
Just your name and address, please.
Pardon me?
Just
my
your name and
is
address, please.
Anina Forney. And I live at 323 Park Avenue for 56 years.
Thank you.
I am not in favor of having this new idea of this property. First, it was five units, one and two bedrooms, I believe. Now it is three bedrooms, five units. I am concerned of the added traffic and the school children in this area. Dodson Street gets rather busy with traffic and will now have more added traffic. If I lived next door or across the street from this complex, I would be very unhappy. I think if the neighbors lived next door and wanted to sell their homes, it would be very hard to sell. Who would want this huge building next door to them? I think that two nice homes built would look much nicer and would blend in with the surrounding homes. I ask for the builder, would you like to live next door to this? Thank you.
Thank you. Dick Vogel? Still with us? Okay. All right, that's all I have on the list. Does anybody else wish to speak on this matter? Okay. David, anything else?
I did just had some questions for the commission that were outlined in the staff report. As noted on the site plan and in the table on, I think it's page
7 of 7.
Sorry, page 5 of the report, the only item that does not comply with the proposed R7 zoning is the north setback, which is required to be 25 feet. It's proposed at 20 feet and 9 inches. So that would be the only part of the zoning relief that's necessary, assuming, of course, we can meet the building height of 35 feet. So I guess the question for the commission to consider is this an appropriate use of the planned unit development tool to grant that zoning relief? Is there a benefit to the community that warrants offsetting that setback? Are there adjustments that could be made to the site plan to provide five units, which is allowed under the zoning, if that's approved, to comply with the setback, or are there adjustments that need to be made to maybe reduce the number of units to comply with the zoning?
When I read the definition of residential PUD, I was a little bit confused. I don't think I've seen this definition before. Maybe I have. It talks about to offer recreational opportunities close to home and to enhance the appearance of neighborhoods by conservation of streams, natural everything. Is it, how does, that tie into this, or is it?
This is a little challenging, and that's why I highlighted it in the report. It seems that section of our ordinance is really geared towards kind of greenfield development, like yeah. Fisher Farms, when you had hundreds of acres that you were planning out development for in separate neighborhoods, and providing for parks and open space. You'll note that we've had other PUDs of a similar product, whether it's Campbell Row or 7th Street Townhomes or 1st Street Row Homes, that we have processed as a PUD. We have another section of the ordinance that speaks to implementation of opportunity sites in our downtown plan. And those satisfied that criteria. This obviously is outside of the downtown area, so doesn't really fit that definition. So I don't bring it up to throw a wrench in anything, but to get the commission's feedback and interpretation on the purpose and intent of applying a planned unit development to this site, or if we should be sticking to a code-compliant zoning plan, which would be tied to a site plan approval. So architectural elevation, site plan, stormwater, all of that would be addressed in a site plan review.
Right. I can't speak to whether it should fall in the PUD, but there is a section at the bottom of the description that, you know, while I can't find a stream or natural attribute, the last three lines say to promote appropriate architecture between adjacent dwellings and institutional buildings, i.e. firehouse, law office, church, that type of thing, and to encourage the placement of structures in proper relationship to the natural characteristics of the site, including cluster development where appropriate. So I don't know that it fits perfectly in there, but it could fit in there if that's the best way to go. Regardless of how you bring it forward, we're still going to wrestle with height, setback, and its effect on the surrounding properties, right? Much feedback that is, but
I think in other areas we have, I think First Year Homes is a good example where we granted the setback relief on the north side of that site. That was the request, and then it was suggested that they actually pushed the building farther south to meet that setback requirement.
Right.
And we granted the zoning relief on the south side. What that accomplished in that situation was that it actually lined up the face of that building with the neighboring properties.
Right.
So it was actually promoting consistent character with the area. I think if you push this south and grant the zoning relief on the street side, you're not accomplishing the same thing, because the house to the west, this already sticks out in front of. So you'd just be pushing it farther out in front.
Right.
So, I mean, there are subtle differences, and I think it's kind of taking a hard look at those if this comes forward on are we granting zoning relief to increase density or to really promote proper development of the site?
And obviously, 5 times $350,000 is greater than 4 times $350,000. So the developer, the applicant will have to consider, does this work without variances and, to put 4 units here? I mean, they're going to be wrestling with those things as well, and what they bring back could be very compliant or it could be subject to further comment and an opinion of the committee.
Just a comment on why we determine 5 units. A little along what the idea is that by the time we feel we'll knock the house down and do the things necessary, we'll certainly have a couple $100,000 in the property. So judging on what we have previously done in this community, which is 2 duplexes on Stevens and 2 duplexes on Sandholm, we're trying to get our land cost at approximately $40,000 per unit. And one of the problems that this community is facing and other communities is, if you look and you track your own real estate in your community, you'll see there's really one lot across from Park Place on Stevens that's marketed at $230,000. So if we use any kind of barometer as to land costs versus the end product, once your land cost gets to a certain point,
I think there's a diminishing return that doesn't make sense. Go to four units, it's only $10,000, but if we get into a struggle where we have to get that unit down to 325, we're safer if we can go with five units. That's really the backbone of it, because if we say 350, we're going to have to pay a 5% real estate commission. We're going to have to pay different things that are going to come off of there. So it's not going to be 350 my way or 360 my way.
Right.
So that's why we use the unit, the variance, and there's only 10 feet additional north property between the house and our lot line. Right. But that's almost a 30-foot buffer, and that's when I looked at the property on James Street across from that Shodine did, we're certainly much further away from our neighbors than he is. Now, it's a different area of zoning, and I get that, but, you know, we're providing certainly a greater buffer. So
it'd be interesting to consider four there. I mean, we're not making any decisions tonight or anything else. I work with some home builders around the country, and I hate to use rule as a thumb, but generally they say, have told me that the price of a lot is between 25 and 33% of the end selling price of the home. So at $50,000, mm-hmm. you'd end up with a home selling for $200,000, and you're going to get much more than that. So I think your land cost from me sitting here where I'm at today is much lower than I would have expected,
yeah.
based on your selling price. So well, there should be profit in there.
Well, there should be. There should be.
For four units at
$350,000. And when was that discussion?
Ongoing, all the time.
Okay.
Active with them.
You know, just as a...
And land prices vary, yes, I know.
Yeah.
But
Not just land prices, but lumber's 30% more than it was.
Your vertical costs are much more susceptible.
Yeah. We're doing the house on oak wood, and that, you know, used to be lumber was $10 a foot, now it's $13,
right.
$14 a foot. So we're trying to project that into that,
right.
and then financing costs.
Right.
You know, financing costs is going to add $10,000 a lot pretty quickly when you start borrowing at those numbers. So...
I think whatever we see, we want an appropriate building, appropriately sized. Mm-hmm. We will factor in the variances and how it impacts your neighbors. So probably good to consider a lot of things.
Given this location, it's an interesting fit. I mean, I think the zoning is going to be difficult to vary on.
Okay.
At R3, what could they build? I mean, you might not be crisp on that.
R3.
Which is what it is today, right?
Is an 8,400 square foot minimum lot size and 60 feet of frontage. If you look at the plan, you can see that there's at least two lots that would be possible out of that, having 60 feet of frontage and at least 8,400 square feet of lot area. So there could be two single family homes. You know, if you were to go to, say, like an R6 zoning, there's a possibility you could fit two code compliant duplexes. And then in R7 zoning, you could do up to five units if you could find that 4 feet on the site,
mm-hmm.
or maybe four units all in a row,
right?
All attached in one building.
I'd encourage you to work with staff closely.
Yeah, we do. We do. We talk a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, but thank you anyhow.
All right,
thank you.
All right.
So, David, when would Title 11 go? Is there going to be a special meet? The City Council was just last week, right? Are you going to try to do it by August 1st?
There is a meeting on Monday, but that's on the strategic plan. So it's a special meeting reserved for that topic. So this would be August 6th. It would be the next City Council date.
5 days of exposure.
Right.
Unless you can add it to Mondays.
Don't answer the phones for 5 days.
You'll
be fine.
Never got that email. What? No, we actually do have a meeting set already with AT&T that is interested in small wireless facilities. So they've been paying close attention.
AT&T, product.
No, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your time.
Cable you're talking about, or
yeah.
Stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You couldn't add it to August 1st? You can't add it to the special meeting.
July
30th.
Monday.
I don't know.
Plus, we wouldn't have the minutes and stuff ready by then.
Anything else, David?
As far as upcoming items, we don't have anything pending right now for the first meeting in August.
that was going to potentially be a Dunkin' Donuts meeting, but they have not resubmitted drawings, so we're waiting for them to come back with revised plans. This Friday, I believe you all received the invitation for the groundbreaking ceremony for the library, so that's really exciting to see that come into life.
Debris fences are up already.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're ready to go.
We've already gotten the complaints on the visibility issues with the fence. We're on it. You can see first year row homes is well underway. So
yeah.
That's
I'm here. The foundation is in there now.
Yeah, they,
cool. Parts of it.
Yeah, it's supposed to take a few weeks for the foundation.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. And the roadway construction should be wrapping up there, too. So if you've been caught in that.
What's the date for the – I missed it. The groundbreaking ceremony.
Tomorrow at 3.
Friday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow at
3 o'clock.
Tomorrow at 3.
At the site, obviously.
Other than that, we've got a lot of things kind of circling but not formally submitted yet. We've got Burlington, I think, is targeting a September opening out of Fabian Crossings. Fresh Time, I think, is still into 2019. There's discussion about an outlot at the corner there of Fabian and Randall. We've seen some conceptual site plans for an Oberwise. I don't think that's
a
secret. So that center has gone from struggling to
it's looking better every day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love the landscaping. That really worked out great. I missed that meeting.
As that fills out, it's only going to look better and better. I really like the flagstone too, because it gives it kind of a seasonal interest too.
What about Millrace Inn?
Millrace Inn, we have had kind of a what's called a meeting, but it was kind of a come together meeting after the landmark nomination. Regarding what we should do for next steps. And I think we've kicked around some ideas of how to proceed with a concept review, or whether it's a public charrette process. So we've actually just prepared some draft documents for them to consider and let us know how they want to proceed with considering a redevelopment of the site. So we'll have to wait to hear back from them.
Any interest in purchasing the property to the north? Can you get that done?
To the north.
Oh, yeah.
The bike shop and the...
They're under contract on the bike shop.
They have.
So
yeah,
they've got the corner under,
okay.
Under their control.
Was one of the difficulties earlier.
I don't believe they've closed, but I
well, obviously, it's contingent.
Yeah, they would
contingent upon
they would
them
have the
getting
hard corner.
Something done.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's necessary.
Okay, so they were able to get that.
So, yeah, discussions are underway. It's a good sign.
Are we thinking when Dunkin' Donuts comes up, are we thinking we're going to have it here or move it to like Public Works or something like that?
It's
down the aisle.
Yeah. There was some opposition to offering TIF assistance.
Yeah.
It was
pretty bad.
It was a pretty well attended city council meeting. But I think that's given them some pause. So at this point, we haven't received revised drawings. If that comes forward and we suspect it'll be a large crowd, we might do that.
So the decision was made off.
Right. I believe it passed 6-4 to approve the financial incentive.
So TIF and sales tax, right?
Sorry?
TIF and sales tax, right?
Right. Part of it was a sales tax rebate, and some of it was assistance.
So what kind of traffic counts are they giving on this?
We haven't seen it yet. So I think they haven't taken those steps until they had assurance that the project
was going forward. In a gas station, it was a little tricky.
But I think that's key to remember, too, though. It was a 24-hour gas station.
Yes.
And with the state street improvements, the state took a look at all their access points and didn't recommend removing any of them, but Dunkin' Donuts is offering to remove the westernmost access on State Street. Would be
that turning movement
very
that
good.
Helps.
Is this the same applicant that was for Pepper Valley?
It is. I believe it's the same broker, but it's not the same franchisee.
Because he owned like 69.
Right. I think he moved on, but this is a different franchisee.
He was tired of
our-
it wasn't nice.
No, he was not nice.
Okay. We are on camera. Reminder.
Okay. Thank you.
Move to adjourn.